John Murray is a doctor and writer. He worked with the Center for Disease Control's Epidemic Intelligence Service, analyzing epidemics of dysentery and cholera in Africa and Asia. He's also been a teaching writing fellow at the Iowa Writers Workshop. Murray has just written his first book, a collection of short stories called A Few Short Notes on Tropical Butterflies. Several of the stories draw on his medical experiences in developing countries. Here's a reading from his story, Watson and the Shark, about a doctor treating war refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo. The victims had been attacked with machetes. In the reading, you'll hear a triage nurse referred to as Made in Detroit because she's wearing a donated American T-shirt with that logo. The doctor is treating a teenaged boy whose stomach was slashed by a machete.
It was a huge abdominal laceration, right through muscle, peritoneum, bowel, and a healthy segment of the lower lobe of the liver. I was assailed suddenly by the warm reek of gut contents and pulled back sharply. This needed immediate work. The wound was a vicious cutting injury made with a long, sharp blade, at least 12 to 24 inches long, I estimated, and this was confirmed by the survivors around me. They had been attacked with machetes, broad-bladed farmer's implements that were used for clearing scrub and cutting cane sugar. I got Made in Detroit to put in an IV line, run in a quick liter of normal saline, and then start a second liter and give the first dose of ceftriaxone and metronidazole. I held off on the morphine because I guessed he was splinting the wound with his own muscles and didn't want him to relax for the fear of starting a major bleed. Made in Detroit talked quietly to the man next to the boy, who was his uncle. The teenager's name was Gabriel, she translated, in his final year of school and a star player of Le Football, a center forward who had already tried out for the national team. All of his family had been killed. Looking back into the tent, I could see that every eye was fixed on me, and I felt that sense of power and control that I needed then. This was why I was a trauma surgeon, and I wanted life or death, all or nothing situations. Life or death. That was why I was there in the jungle, and I honestly had a tremendous feeling of being in the right place and of being filled with a certain glorious energy.
John Murray reading from his new collection of short stories. As an epidemiologist working in Africa, Murray saw a lot of machete wounds, although he didn't treat them himself. I asked him about the problems faced by the doctors who did.
What people found is that quite often the people who were severely injured with a sort of a knife wound or a machete wound were going to actually die, unfortunately, out where they were wounded, often from just blood loss, where they stood, if you like. And it happened quite quickly, and they were a long way away from any sort of help. So a lot of those injuries were fatal, unfortunately. In fact, you know, in Burundi and Rwanda, in countries that have had that sort of violence, other public health problems actually ultimately compromise the majority of deaths, if you like. And by other public health problems, I mean common infectious diseases like diarrhea, cholera, and dysentery were a particular problem in Rwanda and Burundi, and other infectious diseases that are sort of endemic in those countries under normal conditions, such as malaria or pneumonia and so on.
You said that some of the things that you had done were undermined or destroyed by the circumstances of war or poverty. Can you give us an example of something like that, something that you tried to change or that you thought you'd succeeded in changing and then it was undermined by circumstance?
Well, Burundi is a good case in point because we'd worked there for some time on establishing a system of managing dysentery, for example, epidemic dysentery, which is a big public health problem in that part of the world. And a lot of work had gone on to set up systems to manage it, to provide drugs, to treat it, and systems to get drugs out to peripheral areas and systems for monitoring how well treatment was working and so on. So it took sort of at least 5 years. And so all of that within the space of about 3 days or 4 days, which was when the civil war began, was utterly destroyed. Not just infrastructurally, but from the point of view of personnel. So suddenly all these people who'd been trained and who were good people and who were working and so on had gone. They'd either fled the country, or they were dead. And I went back later to try and find colleagues that I'd worked with on some of the sort of dysentery work, and half of them were not there, and half of them had actually been killed.
What was your internal debate like about whether you could make a difference or not, whether this work was worth it or not for you?
I really found ultimately that the local people, I mean, I'm talking about people who come from some of the countries where I've worked and who are there working now, and how they saw the situation and what inspired them. And, you know, they remain committed to improving their own countries under, you know, the most difficult conditions. I think what they have is a sort of a fatalism, if you like, a way of seeing the world that allows them to go on. They have very little, but they have a great sense of sort of human spirit. And it's that human spirit, that notion that just the act of trying to make a difference and keeping on going will ultimately make some larger difference.
When you took the medical histories of patients in civil war or developing countries, was the process very different than taking medical histories in the United States? I don't know if you've done it in both places, but I'm wondering if there were different meanings attached to certain questions, if certain questions seemed too private, too off limits in some of the countries that you worked in, and if the ways that people had of describing their bodies and describing their symptoms was very different from what you were accustomed to.
It is a big issue when trying to get information from people who come from a very different cultural background. So, for example, rapid or fast breathing, which we usually recognize as a sign of, say, pneumonia or a lower respiratory tract infection. In some places it's called, for example, stomach moves in waves. The stomach moves in waves, which is sort of which actually you get when you have a fast respiratory rate, but they describe it in terms of what the stomach is doing. Something I remember very clearly is the term chicken eyes, which is used to describe children who, in Indonesia and in other places too, children who are starting to go blind from vitamin A deficiency. When they don't have enough vitamin A, they start to lose their sight. And in the very early stages, they can see in the day, but they can't see at night. And the way that's described culturally in some places is as chicken eyes. That is, when it starts to get dark, these little kids run into objects and trip over things and can't see things properly. It's the sort of very early sign of losing their vision. And that's what happened. And chickens have bad vision at night. Would not have imagined that that sort of would be a sort of a way of describing it, but it's a very good sort of marker of early vitamin A deficiency.
Do you still practice medicine?
I'm still doing my international health work. I'm doing less of it, but I'm still making trips to developing countries. I did about 5 trips last year, mainly to Africa, to Ethiopia and Ghana mainly. So I am keeping on going and working on more sort of discrete activities now that are shorter term things. But yes, I am. I mean, I believe in it and think it's worthwhile and would like to sort of keep helping where I can.
Well, John Murray, thank you so much for talking with us.
That's a pleasure.
John Murray is the author of the new collection of short stories, A Few Short Notes on Tropical Butterflies.